Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about a half hour, we'll talk to Jake Eisenberg, of course, one of the voices of the Royals. You hear him here on 96.5 The Fan. Down the home stretch of the season, what, 11 games to go? We'll talk some Royals baseball with Jake, get his perspective on the rest of this series against the Tigers. Obviously a frustrating one last night where you had a grand slam from Bobby Witt
Jr. You're up 5-1, feeling good.
Yeah, and look, Seth Lugo's been amazing all year, but just didn't have great control early in the game. Got out of that third inning and thought, okay, maybe he'll settle in, and just didn't have it. And the Royals end up dropping a tough one. So we'll talk about that with Eisenberg. Plus, here in about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk a little bit about what last night is an example of, and hopefully not repeating history come playoff time. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Also, you can watch the show on Twitch, Twitter, X, Facebook,
YouTube,
all of them, all the social channels,
all the ones.
You social. Can I? Because that's a thing we can start. You know, it's like wherever you listen to your podcast, wherever you social, that's where you can watch the show.
My kid has started recording videos of him reading books.
Yeah,
and he does it in the style of YouTube. Like, he's always just like, he said, if you like this book, give it a thumbs up. And then at
that's
the
great.
End,
that's
he
great.
Doesn't say like and subscribe at the end.
He might as well.
But we're dangerously close. He's like, talk to you next time. And then finishes his book. Hey, whatever kids encourages kids to read, I'm not here to fight it. Okay? If this is what gets him into reading, let's do it.
I saw one of the videos, I think on your Instagram, maybe over the weekend or something that you posted as well. I do have some good news real quick before we get into what could become official later on today, and that is the signing of Kareem Hunt. The good news, though, Drew, we have confirmed on Friday at 10:30, we will have your hair cut. Yes, cut and bleached like Joe Burrow. Nice folks, some listeners of the station, own a hair salon downtown Hair Lounge in KC Mo. Listener and his wife, they own this salon. They're going to come in studio at 10:30 on Friday. They're going to give you a nice little cut.
Let's do it.
And they're also
going to
get a cut as well. They're going to take care of Drew on this one, paying off his bet. So we appreciate both Randy and Rye, who are going to make this thing happen.
So he's going to get it done in studio on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Drew, this is going to be, I'm very curious to find out what this looks like on you, you know?
So am I,
actually. You ever had your hair bleached blonde?
So, no, I've dyed my hair.
Once.
I've dyed my hair one time. And
I don't think there's any photos of it. But
I dyed my hair one time, and that was for like a Halloween thing. Uh-huh. It was like crazy hair day, so I dyed my hair green.
Was that temporary dye?
Correct.
Like that spray kind?
The dye came out in like a day.
Yeah, sure.
So this is more permanent. Not fully permanent, but
one time.
I'm very excited to see what it's going to look like. I think my wife is as well.
I'm assuming no photos still exist, so you don't have to go looking for them, similar to other photos of me you've tried to find. But
Was it frosted tips, or was it actually fully blonde?
No, it was like, you know, late high school, middle high school. I was probably like 17 years old, bored in the middle of summer, and at that time I was going to a lot of like punk concerts. And somebody was going to dye their hair. They did in like a cheetah pattern. Like, so they dyed their whole hair white and then black and orange. So they were like, hey, you want to dye yours? And I was like, yeah, I don't care. Sure. And so it was fully like platinum white. And it had like red, I think, in it. Like red tips, maybe? This hair for a month, probably.
Yeah, I wish we had video of that. We will have video, I promise, on Friday. One, we'll have the live stream going, of course, Friday at 10:30 when Drew's getting his haircut and the hair bleached blonde like Joe Burrow. We'll also have some videos. Our social media team will be up here taking photos and videos. So don't worry. We will have you covered.
We won't miss it.
You'll also have to report back what your wife thinks of it on that Monday after she spends a weekend with you with the Joe Burrow cut. Maybe she'll like it. Does she like Joe Burrow?
Yeah.
Maybe this will be really good for you.
She's almost an adopted Bengals fan. She doesn't claim she's a Bengals fan, but she'll root for them because I root for them. She actually suggested that the day that I get it done, she would come up here and watch because she wanted to witness it. So I don't know if
she's welcome to come.
I don't know if she will or not, but I will. Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be fun.
So that's happening on Friday. We'll have that plus our normal fan club. So it should be a fun Friday show. But let's start with the Chiefs. We know the injury news yesterday. Isaiah Pacheco reports out there now 6 to 8 weeks. We'll see if it's actually only that. We know that kind of stuff can change, but he's going to go on IR. And yesterday we brought up a couple names that are out there. Hey, what options do they have internally? What options do they have externally to help out this running back room when you don't have Clyde available till week five? You don't have Pacheco available for 2 months, at least it sounds like. And so your running back room is Carson Steele and Samaje Perine. And we're naming off some guys. And one name that kept coming up on the text line was Kareem Hunt. And we know the backstory there. And how it went down, not only the video, but lying to the organization in 2018. Remember, that was a very good offense in 2018. They were trending towards doing something pretty special that year. And,
still one of the best offenses. Well, it was really good. It wasn't as good as the year before.
It was a historically year. Great year.
Was a good historical
and
year.
They still cut him at that time. So I thought, all right, I don't know if the organization's willing to open that door back up. Well, he's in for a visit. He's in town now.
So they're willing to open the door.
He's getting a physical, by all accounts, barring a surprise. I mean, he's going to sign with this football team. I'll be honest, still sitting here today, like, no matter what your feeling is, the surprise part is real to me just based on everything that happened. Do I think he can help this team in some form or fashion? Yes, I do. I think multiple backs that you would potentially bring in can help the team based off of what is currently the room. As of right this second, the room is Carson Steele and Samaje Perine. So can he help you? Sure. We can get to the level of what that looks like. But I am very surprised that they went back down this road. It's not often. Can anybody give me an example? I was trying to think all morning. An example of an organization that cut someone because they lied to the front office. Their owner spoke to the media about it at the time, said they lied or they were lied to. The video that we all know was out there at the time. And then 5 years later, brought back the same player. We know players get second chances. I'm not against second chances.
He's had several of them. He's been with other teams.
But usually it's another team or the Chiefs taking a second chance on someone that got cut from another team. It's very rare in sports. You know what it is? It's desperation. That's fine. It's desperation. You're going for a three-peat, but let's call it like it is. They're desperate right now.
So there's one way it surprises me, and in another way I think it makes a lot of sense. What I told you yesterday was I understand why Chiefs fans are bringing his name up, because fundamentally the type of back they're looking for is Kareem Hunt. They're looking for a guy to run the ball on first and second down, or stand back there and handle some pass blocking duties on first and second down in a timeshare with Carson Steele while Samaje Perine comes in for every third down. That pretty much describes Kareem Hunt. I dug deeper into his stats yesterday. I think the three-yard average per carry is a bit misleading. I think some of the other statistics deeper into that would support that he was better than that and that Cleveland just stunk. Their offensive line had some problems. That's fine. I'm just saying, like,
I mean, I hear you, but like, I mean, it was his career low in yards per carry.
It was, but like, I would say that I don't think that that's telling the whole story. It's just looking at his yards per carry. So he does technically fit what they needed. And if he had not been ever a member of this team and he had never been cut by this team for what had happened, well, then I would just have assumed that this was the guy they were targeting from the beginning, from a player standpoint. But I also think that, like, I've seen a lot of people, and it seems to be the sentiment to be like, well, it's 5 years ago, forget about it, doesn't matter. Like, I don't necessarily disagree with the sense that is time can heal this wound, and that, you know, he's probably spoken to Clark a lot during this time. He seemed very contrite about the things that have happened since then. He's spoken about it multiple times. He'd been, like, after that, he was still kind of going through it for a little bit and talking about how he should have been playing in the Super Bowl and all this stuff. So I'm not saying he's not that, but I was surprised. Because it ended, I was covering the team at that time. It ended pretty abruptly and quickly and shockingly at that time when all of a sudden the league's best offense cut Kareem Hunt a year after he had had a phenomenal rookie season. It was like, boy, this went ugly. Normally, I don't just go back to it. And like you said, I can't think of an example.
It's very rare. They're in a unique spot. I think we recognize that. They're going for history. They've won back-to-back. They're going for a three-peat. Their top running back just suffered an injury this early on in the season. And we know with other moves, they're not going to let anything really get in the way of their pursuit of a championship. And for that, I totally get it. You know, you may disagree with the word desperate, but I think if this team was not in the middle of the dynasty that they're in, and if this team wasn't the favorite to win the Super Bowl like they are, they're off to a 2-0 start, all this kind of stuff, I don't believe they would entertain this. But they are, and here we are, and I would be almost surprised, right, if he doesn't get signed, unless something's up with the physical. But he was a free agent. Other teams could have signed him. They sure chose not to. So with that said, let's just move forward that he likely gets signed later today. What's realistic for him? Because I assume this is going to be a running back by committee approach for the rest of the way. I don't think Steele or Perine or Kareem Hunt are suddenly getting, you know, 95% of the touches.
I think it's 50-50 between Steele and Hunt in this scenario in the normal downs, and then Samaje all the time on third.
I think Perine is, as we've all made the comparison, McKinnon, we haven't really seen it yet, but like that's his role. He's a third down back. He's a receiving back, fourth most receiving yards by a running back in the NFL last year. That rule doesn't change, I don't believe, for Perine. The question is, who's going to split the actual carries? And for this week, you know, majority of them are probably going to go to Carson Steele. As the season goes on, if Kareem Hunt is actually signed, we'll be interested to see what that split looks like. I don't question the motivation for Kareem Hunt. Like, if you're looking on the positive and you would say, well, he should be plenty motivated because of how his time in Kansas City did end, his own doing, but still how it ended. And now he has a chance to maybe get a ring that he feels like he should have already had, but he made a mistake. And so that part, like, if you're a believer in that kind of storyline, I think the motivation angle is fair. Like, I think he'll be plenty motivated to go out and prove not only, you know, others wrong, but that haven't signed him this off. I mean, the Cowboys decided to sign Ezekiel Elliott over Kareem Hunt. Like, that was pretty surprising to me in the offseason.
It's kind of in a similar way where they're familiar with Ezekiel Elliott. He's familiar with what their offense looks like. There's some comfort there. And while I'm assuming the offense has changed since Kareem Hunt last played for this team when he was 23 years old in 2018, it is still an Andy Reid-led offense. So there probably are some similarities between that. And over the last couple of years, what he's done is what you're asking him to do here. Just be a role player. He's had about 1,000 yards rushing over the last two seasons. So about 500 yards a season. He can score some touchdowns. That's kind of gone away from his game. They don't really use him like the goal line back over the course of there. And he was a nice spell to Nick Chubb. Now he's just going to be asked to do that same thing. Carry the ball 10 times a game, 8 times a game, 7 times a game, while Carson Steele picks up the rest. And then make sure they don't screw up in pass protection. I don't think it's out of the skis for what they're going to ask him to do as a 29-year-old backup running back. Now, essentially, they're running out two backup running backs with a third playing the specialty end of this. But I expect that if he gets signed today, which, again, I think you and I are both kind of anticipating he will. Nate Taylor's coming in at one if, for some reason, that deal's not done by then. But I would expect that if he signs, they're in a timeshare. And it might be a little bit more than we've seen in Andy Reid in a long time with hot hand, where the 60-40, the 60 goes to the man who's running well that day. If Kareem Hunt's the better runner that day, he gets 60. If Carson Steele's the better runner that day, he gets 60. And both players better hold on to the damn ball, or it's going to be 70-30.
Sure.
That applies to Kareem Hunt the same as it applies to Carson Steele. They will also be valuing the person who does not give the ball up. Carson Steele did that in the last game. We talked about this. Kareem Hunt did that in his very first game, where I also think he scored 4 touchdowns. But it's like, you got to avoid that if you want the trouble to avoid. But right now, they're like, Pacheco is having a hell of a start to the year, it seemed like. So maybe the run blocking's okay.
Yeah, and we'll see. Let's say he signs today, knowing that there's a game Sunday. You know, is he active on Sunday? Well, you know, we'll see, you know. And if he is active, I do think Carson Steele this week would get the majority of those.
Kind of shape they think he's in when they look at him today.
But even, I mean, tomorrow's Wednesday. I mean, like, today's already Tuesday. So, you know, he signs today. Is he practicing today? You know, I guess what I'm saying is, how ready can he be for Sunday and having a full grasp of the offense? I understand he's been with Andy Reid before, but it doesn't mean that he's just going to be 100% knowledge of the playbook by Sunday. Could he be active on Sunday? I think there's a chance, just it might be a little more limited. You know, there's what, now with the IR stuff, they got multiple roster spots open, actually. They've got some flexibility. Hollywood Brown, IR, Pacheco, IR, there's two roster spots right there out of the gate. So there could be even another move, not a running back, but another move that happens later on in the week, just based off of where things go. So that's the latest. We'll let you know if anything becomes official, but Kareem Hunt is reportedly in Kansas City undergoing physical and all that kind of stuff. And look, I would imagine I don't know if there's a conversation with Clark Hunt or not. I mean, certainly Brett Veach is not bringing Kareem Hunt back to Kansas City for even this portion of a visit if he didn't have the blessing of ownership to do so.
I assume everyone has to sign off. Andy, Clark Hunt, yeah. I think you kind of go up the board and look no matter what. And so because I think that when you figure out what this is, it's a weird, unique situation because whether we like it or not, I've never seen a team cut a player for getting in trouble and then bring him back 5 years later. Now, I'll say 5 years is a long time. This would have been far more shocking, Gold, if it was two, right? Like, if this was 2020, you'd be like, ooh.
No, five years is a very long time
in the NFL.
It's just that it's a pretty rare thing. It's a unique circumstance. Not many teams have done that. So we'll see as the day progresses. We'll talk more about Kareem Hunt being in Kansas City. Let's pivot a little bit. We'll actually have Jake Eisenberg join us now. A little bit earlier, we're going to have him join us in 15 minutes anyway. Jake Eisenberg, one of the voices of the Royals. You hear him here on 96.5 The Fan. You're home for the Royals, and we are in the home stretch of the season. Jake, it's good to have you on the show again, man. Good morning.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me a little bit earlier. I was just so excited to talk to you that I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait another 15 minutes.
It was going
to
be too much.
It's been a great season.
Yeah. I hear you, man. Look, when you think about where we're at now, it's September 17th. We know we're just a couple weeks away from the postseason beginning, and it's looking like we're going to have postseason baseball again here in Kansas City. Back up to when we had you on, I don't know, in April or in May as well, and to think about you know, where this team has progressed and had held steady, I guess, as well. Have you had a chance, even as a broadcaster, I guess, to kind of sit back and think about what seems like a very long season, right? But it's also been an unbelievable ride.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll share something that Q said yesterday when we were talking to him before the game. He said baseball, from a calendar perspective, can be a funny game. That the days can be long, but the weeks and months fly by. And that is kind of what happens during a baseball season, especially one that's been as fun as this. I do remember talking to you guys back in whatever it was, May, June, and saying, like, hey, you might want to prepare yourselves for this. Like, this is a Royals team that, you know, yes, they've gotten off to a good start, but this is no fluke. This is a real thing that is happening. And, you know, the magic number, yes, is still 8 after yesterday's loss, but we're talking about a magic number on September 17th, you know?
When you look at what this team's going to have to do in order to stay in this spot, should their focus be on catching Baltimore? I know the division was a long thought discussion of this, but we can all do simple math. In order for the Royals to catch up on 5 games, I mean, they'd have to win 9 of their last 11, and you'd be asking the Guardians to almost do the inverse of that. But 2.5 games back for a chance at 2 to 3 playoff games, should we be scoreboard watching the Orioles instead?
I think you should be scoreboard watching anybody that you want to be scoreboard watching. I mean, I think from the Royals' perspective, and you talk to Q, JJ, any of the guys, you know, they're going to control what they can control. You know, 8 wins, they're in the playoffs. Doesn't matter what anybody else does. But there's no denying the fact that the Royals have been one of the best teams in baseball at home this season. And so, of course, if you can get a home playoff series in the wild card round or home field advantage in the division series, you want to go for that. And this team has said from the beginning of the year that the goal is to win the division at the start. The goal is obviously the World Series, but one of the paths to that is winning the division. Now, you're in a place where you don't control your own destiny, and that's okay. Look, the Royals won the season series with the Guardians, and at one point were tied with them in the standings. But, you know, right now, 5 games back with 11 games to play, yeah, the math doesn't always math there. It's going to take, you know, the Guardians falling off. You look at the upcoming schedules, yeah, the Royals' schedule is a little bit favorable, but you still got to play the teams that are in front of you. And right now it's about holding off a Tigers team that is surging right now and trying to steal a spot from the Twins who've been fading.
What do you make about what the Tigers, like, this might be just a simple case of the Tigers too little too late, but do you think that they're one of the most competitive teams in the American League? Do you fear them if they were to make the playoffs? Let's say they make it in the twin spot. Do you fear them more than the Twins, more than some of those other teams they might see come October?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, the Tigers pitching has been the best in baseball for the last month and a half now. The offense has struggled over the course of the entire season, but you score enough runs and you have good pitching, good things happen. We've seen that with the Royals at times this year, too. I think the Twins from the start of the season were the most complete team, but the big question is, do they have Byron Buxton? Do they have Carlos Correa? Do they have Royce Lewis fully healthy? I think that's a pretty deep lineup, and they, you know, when you got Pablo Lopez on the mound, your chances are certainly good. I don't know that I'd fear one more than the other, but as we've seen when it comes to October, it's not always the team that's been the best throughout the season. It's the team that's hottest right now. You know, that was the case with the Diamondbacks and the Rangers. So, I mean, fear who you want to fear. I think at the same time, you play your brand of baseball, you play the way you've been playing all season long, and you shouldn't really have to fear anybody, right?
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg, Royals play-by-play broadcaster. You hear him right here on 96.5 The Fan. You're home for the Royals, and they'll be in action again tonight out at Kauffman Stadium. We know they haven't clinched anything yet, although we all feel very good about where things are trending. With that said, how do you think they could play out the rotation down the stretch? Something Cody and I have brought up is, all right, if you're in a three-game series and you want to line up, of course, Reagans and Lugo and Waka, presumably, to pitch, and the way the rotation would set up right now, it looks like that would not be how it lines up if they just played it out. Do you think we'll see a shuffling of the rotation once they actually clinch something?
Well, the Royals do have two off days between now and the end of the season. There's one on Thursday, there's one on Monday. And I was talking to JJ yesterday, and right now Lugo and Reagans are lined up for the final two games of the season. And, you know, the conversation that we're having about, you know, the Royals pushing for home playoff games, trying to catch the Orioles, potentially trying to catch the Guardians. If the Royals are in a position where they can catch one or both of those teams, they're going to. And if Reagans and Lugo start those final two games of the regular season, well, then with an off day before the wild card round, who knows, you know, kind of what it might look like. I think that it's still in a bit of a wait and see approach. I mean, I think the ideal scenario is the Royals clinch a first round bye and don't have to worry about it for a week. So I think, yeah, it's kind of wait and see. But I know for right now, at least, assuming no rainouts or anything else that's weird, Reagans and Lugo are lined up for the final 2 days of the regular season.
Is last night, so like, look, one game in 162, I always just try to kind of erase that. But my fear is, Jake, is that we'll get into a postseason situation and I'll relive the problems that when they do lose, it seems to be similar. It seems to come out of the bullpen and a starting pitching when, you know, they don't have their best stuff. Lugo's been great all year, but Lugo struggles a little bit. They got to go to the pen in the fifth or the sixth inning. That almost always spells a loss for the Royals. Is there a fear around, I guess, for Q that they got to avoid the bullpen as much as possible, where against the Yankees, we saw them use Urseg for two innings or Bubich for an inning and a half, trying to find a way to like create the guys they trust the most?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a fear of the bullpen. I think there are a lot of teams that would tell you that, you know, I mean, Denny says it all the time, right? That the more often you open that door, you don't know if you're going to get a guy who just doesn't have it that night. We kind of saw that play out yesterday for both teams. I'll say this, you know, in support of the bullpen, there have been games this year. You know, remember that doubleheader against the Guardians in that series where, you know, the Royals got short starts from Reagans and Marsh and Lorenzen leaving with injury, and the bullpen was flawless, basically, in taking three out of four that week. So there have been times where the bullpen has stepped up. There have also been times where the bullpen has kind of let the Royals down a little bit. I think that's just the regular ebbs and flows of a baseball season.
When you look at, I want you to make your pitch, because obviously anybody outside of Kansas City disagrees with me, except for, I think, maybe a small handful of people. I understand what the odds say, that Aaron Judge is going to win the MVP. Why do you think it should be Bobby Witt Jr. instead?
Bobby Witt Jr. does every single part of a baseball game at an exceptionally high level every single day. He plays shortstop every single day, except for the one day that he was the DH. He is one of the fastest runners in the game. He's playing gold glove defense. He's one of the most complete hitters in the game. He's got 32 home runs, 108 RBIs. Those are just counting stats. He might win a batting title. And I know that Aaron Judge's case, in large part, kind of hinges on a historic season. He's approaching 60 home runs. He's got an outside shot at the Triple Crown. Bobby Witt Jr.'s had a historic season, too. It's just the ninth Royal ever to have 200 hits in a single season. He could lead the league in average hits and runs. That's only happened five times in baseball history since 1900, and the other five guys are all Hall of Famers. You know, he could be the first shortstop ever to have back-to-back 30-30 seasons. So history is on Bobby Witt Jr.'s side, too. And you just look at the positional value also. I mean, for a 24-year-old shortstop, he's doing things that have never been seen before in the game of baseball. He's the most complete all-around player in the game. I think if you were starting a team now, you would take Bobby Witt Jr. and you wouldn't bat an eye. I think if you took Bobby Witt Jr. off the Royals, I think the Royals would be far worse off than if you took Aaron Judge off the Yankees. So I guess that's the elevator pitch for Bobby Witt Jr.
I like it. No, I mean, I can't disagree with anything you said, and I think it'll be really interesting to see, Jake, what the actual final vote count is, even if Bobby doesn't win. Just how close is this thing going to be? One thing we know is it's not going to be unanimous like it was, I guess, for Ohtani last year. I would imagine this thing's going to be a lot closer than people nationally believe when the results come out.
Yeah, and I would say, rightly or wrongly, I think the Royals winning the division and the Yankees not winning their division, I think that's something that could move the needle
100%.
When it comes to voters that might be on the fence.
Totally with you. Jake, appreciate you moving up a little bit with us here on the show, and we'll be listening coming up this week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. Jake Eisenberg, one of the broadcasters for the Kansas City Royals. You hear him on your home for the Royals, 96.5. The Fan.
The betting odds do not suggest how a vote will finish necessarily. They're predicting, they're taking money. They do it based on that, but it is a good predictor, as we know, of how the result will go. I will never understand why it's not closer, because there are stats on both sides. Like, people are like, well, you can't, if you got to start telling me about how he steals bases and play goal, I'm like, that's the whole part of the game.
That's what makes him valuable.
I'm sorry. If it's just about who hits the most home runs, then welcome to AL MVP Brady Anderson back in the early 2000s. I don't care. Like, if we just decided the MVP is whoever slugs the most home runs, well, I guess Salvador Perez should get his award from a couple of years ago when he hit, you know, when he set the Royals record. Obviously Aaron Judge doesn't just do that. I understand that. He has a very high average. He leads the league in walks. He has he's close to the league lead in RBI. I'm not pretending like there are other things. And like, this always, like, it's not even to diminish Aaron Judge's season. What I'm telling you is they are equally good seasons. It should be a coin flip MVP race, and they do not discuss it that way nationally, and it seems unfair.
We'll see what the final vote count is. I'm really going to be curious. How close is it? Because it should be very close. It should be very, very close. I'm not sure if it's going to. I'm 100% with Jake, though, because we brought this up, I don't know, many weeks ago, that I, fair or not, as he said, the division part would be the only way I could see almost now what would be considered nationally a surprising result for MVP, which would be if the Royals somehow, and it'll run out of time to do it, but if they somehow won this division and the Yankees didn't, I think that to me should be a big enough swap for people that are on the fence, if those people exist. I'm just afraid that, as we know, the way the voting goes, American League markets, two voters, two Baseball Writers Association voters, I believe, in each city of those teams. I think so many of these people have made up their mind already, fair or not. I don't think it's fair. And I would be very surprised if Bobby Witt Jr. won MVP. I just want to, I'll feel better if the vote is at least close. Like, it'll kind of piss me off if
it's a blowout. Me too.
Look, Aaron, I get why Aaron Judge would win as well, but at the same time, this should not be a landslide vote when it's all said and done. Remember, this is my other problem with baseball and how they do this. I get, like football, of course, the award should be voted on before the playoffs. I get it. Otherwise, we would just always pick the guy in the World Series and stuff. I get it. But I think baseball screws up so much with when they announce the awards. They wait, like the Super Bowl for the NFL MVP, they announce it Super Bowl week. Makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
World Series, I feel like they announced it 3 weeks before Christmas. Yeah. Like, it's like the end of November or something.
But it is late. It's after the season. All the buzz around baseball is gone. And then they're like, here's the MVP. You're like, you're not extending the calendar. Just get to it.
We'll talk more Royals baseball throughout the show. But up next, I do want to talk a little bit about the first impressions we saw from a team the Chiefs are going to be playing on Sunday, including a great moment at the end with the Eagles.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Losing. Just getting started here on a Tuesday. Cody Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. A little bit later on today, 1 o'clock hour, Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from The Athletic, going to join us on the show. A lot to get into with him. Of course, the injury to Isaiah Pacheco. What's he hearing about how they could work out this running back room? We know Kareem Hunt is in Kansas City, the former Chiefs running back, with a visit, getting physical today, all that kind of stuff. So we'll see. Maybe even is signed by the time Nate joins us in the 1 o'clock hour. We shall see. But a lot to get into. Plus, how about his thoughts on what he saw from the Falcons, who last night on Monday Night Football, we know the Chiefs' upcoming opponent. The Falcons get a game-winning drive with 34 seconds left, and it's Drake London getting a touchdown pass from Kirk Cousins. They steal one from the Eagles. Yes, steal one from the Eagles, 22-21. And what was kind of, Drew, you said it during pre-show as well, like it was kind of a weird football game. Both teams moved the ball at times, but didn't really
capitalize. Other teams didn't look like they were moving the ball. At other times, it was a weird.
It was. And there was everybody's talking about the Philadelphia side, right? Saquon dropped a short pass that stopped the clock with a 1:46 that forced the Eagles to then kick the field goal instead of a game-sealing first down. And so there were a lot of mistakes throughout. That last drive was the best Kirk Cousins had looked, and now that's the question, I think, for the Chiefs heading in on Sunday. And by the way, Kansas City's a 3.5-point favorite on Sunday Night Football down in Atlanta. That was the best drive he has had since he's been with the Falcons. He still didn't look great yesterday by any means, but that last drive, maybe you put it all on the Eagles just playing prevent defense. I don't know, but
I don't know what the hell they were doing defensively.
He said it in post game, and I think it's true. And maybe the Chiefs, you could argue that they're still catching him at the right time, or maybe Sunday night's going to be his breakout game, because I feel like Kirk Cousins each week is just going to get better and better, further removed from the Achilles injury. And maybe we saw a glimpse of that on the final drive. So are we going to see more glimpses of that on Sunday? That's my only concern with the game Sunday, is that we know he's only going to get better. Are the Chiefs still catching the Falcons at the right time before they're clicking? But that was a season-saving type of drive by Atlanta, because they would have been 0-2 going into a game against Kansas City. Instead, they're 1-1.
Be underdogs by what, 5-6 points?
3.5 points.
Oh, underdogs. That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm actually a little surprised by that. I thought it would have been. I didn't check the line yet. Only 3.5 after it. That's because, boy, lines are reactive. One thing we learned that. Because, you know, obviously if they had blown out Cincinnati, that line probably looks a little bit different. And heavy underdogs have been winning a ton. Teams that are 5.5 underdogs or more through 2 weeks of the season are 9-1 against the spread with 5 straight up wins. So you would think the bigger the line, the more likely this game is to be close right now. Truthfully, I watched them and I was unimpressed. I thought Kirk Cousins didn't look like he could get the ball all the way to the sideline. He's got no juice on those throws yet. And I'm assuming that that is just related to coming back from the injury, and week 9 is going to look a lot different than week 2 or 3 for Kirk Cousins. The biggest takeaway I had from that game last night is great time to be catching the Falcons. This is actually a pretty good time to be catching them. Haven't figured it all out. Kirk's still working through the injury. They don't seem like they've got their wits about them yet. Getting picked on a little bit. They won their game, so you're not catching them in like full desperation, because if they lose, then they are really desperate. And so
I'm glad they won last night.
I am too, because I do think that they come in there with a, if we don't win this week, then we're definitely done. We're going to have to save our season against the Chiefs. And now they can say, well, 1-2, we can still live.
Yeah. And look, Robinson was great last night. Well, you know, the Chiefs will have to take care of the backfield there for Atlanta. But as we discussed yesterday, the issues they've had against tight ends, I mean, Kyle Pitts hasn't had a big game yet, but he's probably licking his chops a little bit going into this matchup, because we know the Chiefs have struggled against tight ends. But at the same time, if you're Drake London, if you're Darnell Mooney, the Chiefs corners have shut down wide receivers. And so you know, for those of you that are playing fantasy football or whatever, yeah, you probably are excited for Kyle Pitts to play the Chiefs, but the Chiefs have done a great job against wide receivers so far this year. So that's what I'll be interested to see. What do the Falcons have in store for Kansas City? But I do think while the text line has said, hey, the Chiefs haven't played well either to getting them at the right time. Sure, we're just talking about Kirk Cousins because of the Achilles injury. He acknowledged after the game, even in his interview with Lisa Salters, that, like, you know, he's still not happy with his performance, and he knows he's not playing as sharp as he should. Eventually, he's going to. If you're the Chiefs, you hope that extends past Sunday night, and it'll be a pretty ridiculous environment, actually, I think, on Sunday night. And now they have a win. That'll be the second home game, I think. Second home game for Kirk Cousins, so it won't be his first one. They lost to the Steelers in the opener.
So the truth is, like someone said, hey, you could say the same thing. Yeah, the Chiefs haven't played well. Okay, but they're the back-to-back Super Bowl champion. And they win 13, 14 games a year. I got a pretty good stack of evidence that tells me even if the Chiefs don't play well, they'll win football games.
Well, they just did.
They could not play well against Atlanta and still win. I would argue that Atlanta and Philly both didn't play well, and one of the two of them was going to win that football game. But more often than not, if both of you are playing bad, one team's coming out on top, and that's the Chiefs. And if for some reason you catch the Chiefs in a they're playing well different, then we're having a different stuff. The biggest question I have going into the game for the Chiefs is whether or not how good is Atlanta's pass rush? Because right now, I don't even know who's starting at left tackle for the Chiefs on Sunday, which I do not think is a small story. The fact that they benched Kingsley didn't seem like a big story at the time until yesterday when Andy Reid spoke, and he did not just say Kingsley is going to start again on Sunday.
So they left the door determined to start. Yeah.
He left the door open. So I'm more concerned about that version of where the Chiefs are than what they're going to do against Kirk Cousins. I think he looks okay. And again, I don't think that he will look that way all season. I think eventually Kirk Cousins will figure out how to get the ball to Drake London and Kyle Pitts and a bunch of other guys. But at the moment, they look kind of eh. But then also, you know, the Eagles have blown 10 games in their last two seasons, seemingly.
Jalen Hurts, I mean, he kind of looks, you know, there's moments where you see the MVP runner-up flashes from a couple years ago. A couple of those runs were vintage Hurts. But then, much like even in the win against the Packers in that Friday night game, which seems like forever ago for them, he made some bad mistakes and threw a pick last night. Now, it's the final drive of the game, I understand, but he throws a pick, which ultimately seals the win for the Atlanta Falcons. And so, yeah, it's not like they're clicking. They're 1-1. They were very fortunate to beat Green Bay the week before. And you just look across the entire NFL. I know we're going to talk AFC here in about 20 minutes. You look across the entire NFL. Other than Kansas City I would say Buffalo, the other teams that everybody thinks look good are teams that are very unproven and that you have to be skeptical if they can keep it up. So what I mean by that is the Saints, right? We all acknowledge they've played great 2 weeks in. They look really, really good. But plenty of skepticism still because they're the team that's more of a surprise and based on prior history, et cetera, and their quarterback. You look at some of the other teams that have performed well. I don't know how many believers there are in the 2-0 Chargers and that kind of stuff. Whereas sure. Like Kansas City and Buffalo, them being 2-0, you believe more because we've
seen Texans
it.
Are 2-0 too, but they've looked a little bit shaky.
And they still also drew like with such a small sample size. They had the 1 year last year. They're still, the jury's still a little bit out on them, I think, and what the Texans can be fully.
No, but I buy them more because I was buying them as a good team going into it, right? We think CJ Stroud is the truth, and honestly, he made a couple throws. You watched that game, right? Or part of that game? He made a couple throws in that game that you're like, that's not going to make me disbelieve. And Will Anderson is maybe one of the better young defensive players in the NFL. Like, they still...
I wonder if Joe Mixon will be good to... If he's going to be out or if he misses any time. Yeah. I think Drew Tranquil and Leo Chanel are going to have big games just because of them and Bijan and trying to when he's a receiver, I guess more or less. I mean, are they going to have to track him? The front seven will have to find a way to maintain and get that good push.
Like I kind of like because there's a limited. I don't think it works the way in college football very often, and I don't think the Chiefs ever get burned this way. I don't really care when the opposing team gets you with their running back. The Chiefs did not have a particularly good run defense for the last, 3 years. It has not stopped them from being a very good defense, winning a lot of games. I'm never like, boy, that running back just got the better of the Chiefs today, and they were unable to win the game. Bijan's very good. He will probably get his. He will break off some nice runs. I am more worried about Kyle Pitts, even though he's not the better player of the two. That is Bijan Robinson. I'm worried about what has almost caused him to lose two games. If they had lost either of those games, it would have been because of their inability to stop Isaiah Likely and their inability to stop Mike Gesicki.
I hear you, but wouldn't that, the same argument you just made, like you're not worried about running backs, I would make the same case. I'm not really worried about the tight end beating the Chiefs. Like, the wide receivers are much more capable of the big play to beat you than the tight ends. They're struggling against tight ends. We've all acknowledged that. It is an issue for them right now. Sure. But if you told me I can pick in my poison, if you will, would I rather have a team have tight ends going all over me or have the wide receivers, Jamar Chase, going for 125 yards and two touchdowns? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's like a ranking system. And if I got to choose between that and the running back, I choose the running back going off. So I get your point.
That's it. Well, who knows? I mean, look, Kyle Pitts, we've also had conversations about him anyway. We all acknowledge the athleticism, but he, I still think, has been a major disappointment in his NFL career to this point in time. And this season so far, two games in, I don't have his exact numbers in front of me, but he has not had massive performances yet or anything.
The way that they used him, at least last night in watching, it didn't look like he was getting, I guess, down the field as much, where Mike Gesicki's running the crossing arch. You know, he's getting out in space a little bit more, where I don't think Kyle Pitts was doing that as much in terms of the usage of how Atlanta does things.
We'll have all week to talk Falcons, Chiefs, Sunday Night Football. We'll talk more about them with Nate Taylor in the 1 o'clock hour and as the week progresses as well. Plus, I guess we'll have our Atlanta Falcons insider join us later on in the week too. Formerly a Kansas City Chiefs insider that is now not in Kansas City anymore. We'll explain that later on in the week.
Flip allegiances. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the 0-2 teams. The stats are pretty staggering. In the history of the NFL since the merger, only about 9% of any team who starts 0-2 makes the postseason. Since the playoffs expanded, it's like 5%. So, like, I don't know, man. When you're talking about the teams around the AFC, the ones that take serious, I am borderline ready to eliminate almost any 0-2 team.
Like, yeah, we'll talk more about the AFC and these teams here in 15 minutes or so coming up. Because, yeah, that's always interesting the first few weeks to look at the trends. Yes, there's always exceptions, but you put yourself in a really bad spot. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. I'm sure you all enjoyed Nick Sirianni's Eagles losing in that fashion the way I did.
What's his record since having his big
three and
winning his Super Bowl at Arrowhead?
I believe 3-7, including the postseason loss since he did this. Honestly, like, look, you should, you shouldn't say this very often, but like, I truly can't stand the guy, and I enjoy every single time he loses.
You take pleasure in his pain.
He's your, like, he is your typical, like, East Coast arrogant prick. That's what he is. And I enjoy
that's
him
certainly
losing.
His energy.
Oh, big time. I'm very happy. Like, I like Jalen Hurts a lot. I think Jalen Hurts is terrific in everything that he does on and off the field. Their head coach sucks. I cannot stand him.
Did you guys see Big Dom behind him during the interview after halftime?
Big Dom's running the show.
Just standing right behind
him. Big Dom's running the show. Okay, let's be real. Big Dom's the head coach of that football team.
He's practically designing their defense at this point.
But look, like Nick Sirianni, like he went out. They gave him another chance because they let him go and hire a brand new offensive coordinator, brand new defensive coordinator. He knows this is it for him. They better figure it out. They better get that thing rolling. Otherwise, he will not be a head coach at the end of this season.
If I remember, I think they brought that up on the Friday night game. He's gone through, he said, I forget the number exactly, but he's had different coordinators in each of his three seasons. Like that, I don't know if that's a good thing.
No, it's always a bad thing. Andy Reid has had the same defensive coordinator for years, right? Years and years. And then his offensive coordinator now hasn't changed with Matt Nagy in a while. I mean, it's a nightmare. That whole team. Like, Sirianni, having a bad relationship with your quarterback should immediately be dismissal. Like, papers. Get your ass out the door. We talked about this before. Never choose the coach over the quarterback under any circumstance. Yeah, that's not the person to side with.
Yeah, I mean, like,
unless it's Will Levis, in which case I'll let Brian Callahan.
Fair. But, you know, just knowing the end result after that rant, if you will, he gave in the tunnel, knowing that the Chiefs went on to win the Super Bowl, had already beaten his Eagles the year before in the Super Bowl, and then now see the struggles, how their season ended. And I know they're 1-1, they're not 0-2, but they don't look all that different from a team that was wrapping up at the end of last season. Jalen Hurts is still making mistakes. They still, when it comes down to key moments, they have so many blown leads under, I can't remember the graphic they put up during the broadcast. It's like five blown leads or something in the last nine games. I can't remember exactly, but that's a sign of a bad
Saquon dropping
team.
The game winner, basically. Yeah. I mean, it would have clinched the game if Saquon catches the ball. I think they showed, too, he has the most drops out of any running back since 2021 in the past game.
Or just get a stop. Meanwhile, local college football, speaking of teams that do not look good.
Yeah.
Okay, so first, a note on Missouri and Kansas State, because I do think that we will get time to talk about all three of these teams. I thought Missouri's was as simple as they got punched in the mouth by a salty Boston College team, fought back on what I thought was a really solid win against Boston College. No shame in the way you won it. You got the players you wanted involved in Luther Burden. I thought that they came out swinging. Castellanos is a very good quarterback, and they fought hard. I don't think there should be any embarrassment in their win. And K-State finally used Avery Johnson.
Yeah.
So, like, I felt pretty good about their performance, too.
What, Missouri scored, was it 24 unanswered at one point in time? I thought, considering the start, and that was the first time because of their first two where they were dominant, where they faced some adversity. I think that's a really good sign, actually, if you're a Missouri Tigers fan. Yeah, it got dicey early.
That'd be an easy one to lose.
It was dicey early, but by halftime, the Tigers were up. Like, I mean, they recovered pretty quick. I think that's a really positive sign. And we all know it sounds so simple. Like, once you start giving Luther Burden the football, good things happen.
Yeah, he had six touches for he's pretty good. Yards. Yeah.
So, no, I think you feel good if you're the Tigers. What, they got Vandy coming up this weekend. You mentioned K-State. We wanted to see if they would unleash Avery Johnson more. In the first half, they really didn't. In the second half, they look like the team that have people talking about college football playoff and winning the Big 12.
What
that
a dual-threat
like
college quarterback looks like. He's going to run for 100 yards on you, pass for like 150, and score two or three times. That's what dual-threat quarterbacks do in college when they're good.
There was one throw that he made in particular. I can't remember to who it was along the sideline. It wasn't for a touchdown, but he fit it in a window that was as tight. He had to make the throw as perfect as he did. And it was overall way impressive because the defense had been tested a lot. They faced maybe a top 10 overall pick in McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona. They allowed 138 yards, but it was a quiet 138. The defense made enough plays. Just like Missouri's defense made plays while they forced the turnovers. That was what ended up winning the games for both of them.
K-State ended up rolling in Arizona. Let's not forget, Arizona was a top 25 team.
It was a good team, good opponent, good matchup.
That was really impressive with the defensive performance because that going in, it seemed like we were going to see a shootout, like both teams were going to move the ball. And Kansas State's defense was terrific in that. K-State, by the way, they head out to BYU, one of the most picturesque scenes in college football. It's beautiful. It's late night, altitude, all that. That's something they'll deal with against BYU. And then
it's them in Colorado. Then Jalen Daniels is broken. Can I just say it for you in case you're afraid to?
Go ahead.
He's broken. Ahead. He's a broken man, Alex. I don't know what the hell happened. I came into this season saying if Jalen Daniels starts for this team and plays games, they win games. He is broken. They were running the ball late in the game.
With a minute left to go, they were running.
Trailing instead of letting Jalen Daniels throw. What happened?
So going into the game, we discussed, we're going to find out one way or the other, was that just a fluky performance against Illinois and a bad loss on the road, or is Jalen Daniels not the same quarterback? And we got confirmation. He is not the same quarterback as he was a couple years ago. You want to say it's just the health, just the time off, whatever it is, he's not seeing the field the same. He's not making the same decisions. Then you couple it with a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, they're
clearly
missing him.
Is an issue there. And then flat out, like, they just don't look like a well-coached team. They don't. I mean, not a well-coached team. There's just mistakes. I mean, hell, even when they force a fumble, they don't pounce on the ball. They're all trying to pick it up to score a touchdown.
That play was terrible.
Right before halftime, for the second week in a row, a bad mistake by Jalen Daniels on the pick. And then I'm sure you guys saw it because in the gambling community, people were discussing the bad beat at the first half. But that sequence where UNLV scored right before half, they didn't have their bleep together. Their quarterback was running towards the sideline as the clock is running out. They didn't have everybody lined up. They somehow get set. And then on a wheel route, they throw a touchdown over the defender, and all of a sudden, the game completely flips. Otherwise, Kansas was in control. Bad loss. This season is heading in the wrong direction. And I told you yesterday, Cody, I think it has massive long-term ramifications, not just for the disappointment
but
of
getting their stadium built.
Disappointment for this season, right, where you have these expectations. Is this the year? You get to a title game, all this kind of stuff. Now you worry about fan support. You're playing at Arrowhead in a couple weeks for the four conference games where attendance was already going to be questionable because you're in a 70,000 seat stadium.
Sure.
Now it could be ugly. And then we know that half the stadium is going to be done in August. The other phase timeline has not been announced because they don't have the money for it yet. And as we know, when you are still building up a program, and Lance Leipold has done an unbelievable job doing that, that doesn't change based off of the start, you're going to struggle to get the support. And this could have major ramifications for getting the stadium.
Well, let me ask you with Kansas, because now I'm curious where we stand after two games. They lost to a quarterback who threw for 86 yards. It's just not a good day. Are they still a bowl team?
They're going to be very fortunate to get to six wins at this point, Drew. They're going to be very fortunate. Can they still get there? Yes, I believe that. But they're going to have to be very fortunate to get there. They have one win, and they've lost at Illinois, who's not that good of a team, and they lost to UNLV, who is doing a nice job with Barry Odom, and now suddenly maybe they're in the group of five conversation. But Kansas, the win probability index crap or whatever that gets put out, I saw this over the weekend. In both games, speaks to how they're not executing and the mistakes they're making. In both games, they have, I think, a top five win probability, but losing. Does that make sense? Like their win probability was so high against UNLV late, it was so high against Illinois late, and yet they lost both those games. That is a problem.
To me, I think the loss to Illinois is not as bad of a loss as what we think it is.
Okay.
They've been in position to win both games. They could just as easily be 3-0 as they are 1-2. So I think a bowl, them winning five more games is, given the schedule again, is absolutely still in the cards, in my opinion. Are they getting to the Big 12 title game? No, it's still alive after last week. I think that's dead.
Yeah, I guess the conference is still there, but what have you seen to believe that they're going to do anything in conference?
Well, sure,
play?
But it's a matter of, it's just, to me, it's a matter of them. They've been the better team. It's just taking care of the football. That's the difference.
Because
to me, Jeff Grimes doesn't trust Jalen Daniels, and I think part of that is because he's got three touchdowns to six picks.
Any sentence that starts with the coach doesn't trust the quarterback is not a bowl team. Like, I'd just be, that's just not.
In college, you'd be surprised at how many teams rotate quarterbacks and they find a way to make a bowl. I think they can
Jason
still
Jason Bean was telling this team fine.
I think they can still make a bowl game. Now, this is the thing that I think is really interesting. I brought it up with Rob yesterday. I don't want to bring it up already, but Florida State and Florida, those jobs might be open. Candidate number one that's been listed by both is Lance Leipold. I don't think he would leave, but knowing that Jalen Daniels is not there anymore, Devin Neal's not there anymore, Kobe Bryant's gone, you lose everybody. Instead of going to the portal to get another quarterback, because they got a young guy, Marshall. I don't know if he stays.
To me, that's always going to be in play.
The stadium question mark.
To me, that's always going to be the worrying question when you're at Kansas, right? He's had already two contract extensions. They've done everything possible to try to retain him. I mean, at some point, if he wants to leave, he'll leave. I mean, he's had offers other places. He's chosen to stay. Jalen Daniels, the not being there was always going to happen. Jalen Daniels could have had a Heisman season, and he was still leaving at the end of this year, right? I mean, like, that's not changing. I hear you. Like, that worry is not on my mind, because that worry is always there. The worry right now is that this football team has to avoid being a 5-win team, and they have to avoid that because fan support is going to cause problems, not only for what they're going to have at Arrowhead this year, but the stadium project that we all know does not have full funding.
Because when you're going in to recruit for that exact point, let me show you a stadium that brings an environment that you want to play in. And if you're one fit in and one fit out, it's really hard to make a pitch to a recruit where, if you're talking about stadium atmosphere, one of the more important things for them, it's hard for them to get on board.
Yeah, I mean, they've upgraded other facilities at the brand new weight room and stuff. The stadium, it's about whether or not the team is coming off, to me, a 3-win season, or they find a way to salvage it and win 6 or 7. And right now, I think most people would say it's trending towards the other.
The next three games for Kansas are crucial, though. In terms of the bowl stuff, and again, I don't. The expectations going into the season, a bowl game is meh. Probably, if you were to say, "Hey, KU, you finished 6-6," it's disappointing. But at this rate, get to a bowl game and try to finish the season on some sort of a good note. I think it's still possible.
I think if at this point, I would call the season, from this point on, I'd call the season a win if they got to a bowl game.
Yeah.
Like, from what I know now.
Before the season,
that wouldn't have felt like a win.
It's kind of like Cincinnati, Drew. Just making the playoffs would feel like a win now. That's why you have the same thought. It's the same type of thing. Coming up next year on the show, we're going to talk about the AFC. Well, don't worry. We'll talk about those teams that are 0-2 to start and what that actually means next.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.